you tattoo? Do you have one? When did you get it and why? Does it still hold the same meaning that it did back then? Do you have any regrets about it? Or are you one who stands on the sidewalk as an extravagantly tattooed man or woman walks by, wondering why? In this second hour of Midday Friday, we explore historical and modern tattoo practices, how tattoo technology developed and changed, and the work of contemporary artists. Body art historian Anna Felicity Friedman gives us a tour of different styles of tattoo around the world. We'll hear about traditional practices in Cameroon, where facial tattoos represent social rank, and hear about a family in Jerusalem that's practiced tattooing for 400 years. Plus, we get the lowdown on local from Chris Keaton, founder of the Baltimore Tattoo Museum, the art of tattoo, after the news from NPR. And welcome back to Midday Friday. Dan Roderick's here. Thanks again for joining us. Tattoos in this hour. Tattoos. Maybe you have one or two or many more than that. If not, you likely know someone who does. A 2010 study from the Pew Research Center found that about... They study everything at the Pew Research Center. I guess they haven't studied tattoos for 5 years. But in 2010, their study showed that about a quarter of Americans have at least one tattoo. A quarter of Americans. Now, here's the breakdown by generation from that study. Nearly 4 in 10 millennials, that is age 18 to 29, have at least one tattoo. 4 in 10. For those who do, about half have 2 to 5 tattoos, and 18% of that group have 6 or more. But you may not know it by looking at them. 70% of young people say their tattoos can be hidden beneath clothing. About one-third of Gen Xers, ages 30 to 45, have a tattoo, but only 15% of baby boomers are tattooed, and men and women reported being tattooed at about equal rates. How do you like that? In this hour, we'll learn about the history and the art of tattooing, not just in the United States, but across the globe. It's hard to know exactly where this form of art, body art began. Tattooing in sub-Saharan Africa may date back as far as 84,000 years, based on the discovery of bone tools believed to be tattoo implements, clay figurines from Mesopotamia, and art in Egyptian tombs depict tattooed figures. And mummies from Africa and Siberia have been found to have been tattooed as well. While traditional tattoo practices still exist in many cultures, such as the Fulani people in Cameroon, many forms were wiped out by colonization. Records of the tattoo practices of Native Americans were recorded by early European explorers. Old tools, such as wooden blocks used to stamp patterns on the skin, have been passed down by families. In Jerusalem, Christian pilgrims to the Holy Land can receive tattoos to commemorate their visit from a family that has been practicing the art of tattooing for 400 years. We'll hear more about that family during this hour of the show. Also, we're going to be hearing about an artist from Melbourne, Australia, who draws his inspiration from Renaissance and Baroque art to create extraordinarily lifelike tattoos. Some of his work includes images of Walter White from the drama Breaking Bad and Sean Connery as James Bond. So joining us here on Midday to talk about all this is a woman who spent a lot of time studying it, Anna Felicity Friedman, a tattoo and body art historian. She has been researching the history of tattooing for more than 20 years, and she taught for better than a decade at the University of Chicago and the School of the Art Institute of Chicago. And this fabulous book that has arrived here at Midday from Anna, it's called The World Atlas of Tattoo, and it looks like appropriately like a world atlas of tattooing. It's really beautiful. It's a coffee table style book with a lot of history in it. It's published by Yale University Press. 100 artists from around the world featured in this, showing the range of tattoo art. 700 color photographs. It's really great. So first of all, Anna Felicity Friedman, I want to welcome you to the Midday Show, and I congratulate you on this great-looking book.
Thank you, Dan. Thanks for having me on the show.
Well, also on the show with us today is Chris Keaton. He is founder of the Baltimore Tattoo Museum. down on Eastern Avenue. Eastern Avenue, right? Yeah, right there, on the way to Fells Point.
Yep, right in Fells
Chris,
Point.
Chris, how are you? Chris, nice to see you.
Very good. Nice to see you.
What do you think of that book?
It's beautiful.
Is this gorgeous or
really
what?
Really nice pictures, lots of information in it.
Yeah, Anna,
very diverse.
Anna, how long have you been... Well, I said you've been studying this art for 20 years, so this is the result of all that labor. Intensely on this book the last few years, I guess?
About 18 months of work on the book, all told, yeah. And I have to acknowledge my incredible team of contributing writers who also worked on the project as well. They're often left out of media pieces about the book, and the book was a project of many, many incredible people. So
good. Oh, well, there's, you know, specific artists in here that I want to ask you about as we go through the hour. And so we'll get to that in a minute. But I want to start with this question, because we will get to the history of the tattoo. I think this is fascinating. But what I wonder about immediately is the last 20 years or so. I was saying to Chris before the show, when I was growing up, which wasn't that long ago, the one tattoo I remember was my Uncle Arthur, Uncle Artie, who was in the army in Korea. He was in the Korean War, and he came home with a beautiful Black Panther on his bicep, right? And I used to look at that thing all the time. And he became a hairstylist, and it was kind of, I don't know, you used to find it incongruous that he had it, but it was really cool looking, Black Panther, right? That was the only tattoo I ever saw until, you know, later on, maybe a Marine veteran that my father knew, I think he had a tattoo. Those were the only tattoos I saw. And then it seems like, I'm guessing, maybe 20 years ago, wow, it's just tattoos, it seemed like everywhere. So before we go into the ancient history, Anna and Chris, I just wonder if you could comment on how this happened in the last 20 years. What explains that phenomenon? Anna, I'll start with you on that.
So if I've learned anything from studying the history of tattooing, it's that fashions and passions for tattooing in the Western world have ebbed and flowed throughout history. And so the time period that you describe in the 1950s is part of what I call the dark age of Western tattooing, where it really hit its low, a particularly unusual low, especially in American and European societies, that lasted from about 1900 to 1960. Before that, we actually have a fairly significant number of tattoos on a wider variety of people. And then starting in the 1960s with what's called the Tattoo Renaissance, we have another one of these upswings in tattoo practice. But if you look back much further into the 1800s, into the 1700s, into the 1600s, you see people with as many tattoos as they have today that were upstanding members of Western society.
And what explained this Renaissance? I'll go to Chris on that then. If the last 20 years that I'm talking about, I'm guessing it's 20 years. It might be a little longer than that.
A little bit longer than that, I'd say. I would say musicians and sports figures, people in the public eye, people who are looked up to by younger people, and seeing them with them on them made people want them more.
Mm-hmm. It made the culture develop further from that. And what about technology? That must have had something to do with it too, Anna.
Technology has been the incredible globalizer of tattooing. And if you can read in a lot of the profiles and the artists in the book that they found images online and in the media, in TV shows, in the movies, and they were drawn to tattoo. I'm talking about people in the non-Western world working in these global contemporary styles. And then they were able to go to the internet and find out more. And it has just pushed the acquisition of new tattoo styles in new places and the movement of these ideas in a way that has been unprecedented in decades before.
Another question that I have before we step back further in time and go over the history that Anna chronicles is the extravagance of the tattooing, these elaborate tattoos upon tattoos. Now, is that, you say, the interest in this has ebbed and flowed in time. So did we see extravagant tattooing like that years ago as we do today?
Absolutely. I just gave a lecture last night where I brought out my usual examples. In the Victorian era, and particularly, we have a number of socialites traveling in Japan after it was open to the West, and many of them got full Japanese back pieces, chest pieces, their arms covered. Interestingly enough, one of them was the son of Longfellow, the poet. Charlie Longfellow was one of these people. And then if we go back to the 1600s, we have pilgrims traveling in the Holy Land, many of whom got extensive armfuls of pilgrimage tattoos. And there are portraits of them, elbow to wrist, both arms covered in tattoos. And I could give many more historical examples.
Wow.
Suffice with two.
Yeah. And we see a lot of that today. Let me just step aside here with Chris Keaton for a moment. How did you get into this, Chris? First of all, I'm curious, how old are you?
I am 44.
You're 44, and when did you start thinking about tattooing?
When I was 18, before I turned 18, I was always fascinated by him and looking at him through the punk rock eyes that I had, I wanted one. And my parents wouldn't let me while I lived at home under their roof, and so when I turned 18, was out on my own, I went and got one.
Was it one of the first things you did after turning 18?
Very shortly after.
Where did you go? Where did you get it?
I went down to Virginia to Rick's Tattoos. James Marlowe did my first tattoo.
And what was it? And did you have it in mind or when you went there, or did he show you possibilities?
I had something in mind. I was thinking more about the design than I necessarily needed to, but I picked a black sun with a negative handprint in the middle of it.
And where is that?
On my upper back.
All right. Now, so the journey from that experience to the Baltimore Tattoo Museum, what was that like? How did that happen?
My first tattoo I got with my first wife and then got a couple more. And
wives or tattoos?
Well, at that point, tattoos.
Okay.
And for a divorce present from her, I got a tattoo set up that I ordered through the mail.
Okay, so you had this developing interest, and as a parting gift at divorce time, your wife gave you a kit.
Yep.
And then you became an artist yourself.
Started tattooing some friends, and fortunately, they're still my friends.
Anna, what's your story with tattoos? How far back does it go in your life?
It's actually a very similar trajectory initially to Chris's story. I was also a teenage punk rocker. I'm 43, so this was also in the late 80s. I was drawn to tattooing. I actually was a big nerd, a big high school nerd, and so I started researching the history of it concurrent with my getting my first tattoo also when I was 18. I actually had to go to New Hampshire because tattoos were illegal in Massachusetts, which is sort of a relic of this dark age of tattooing that I talked about.
Mm-hmm.
And mine was also on my back, my shoulder blade. It was a dragon that I later found out was from Ed Hardy, was a dragon from one of his early flash sets from the 1980s. And it was just rendered at this biker shop, Jim's Tattoo in Seabrook, New Hampshire. No gloves, no reused needles. It's completely blown out and faded today from poor technique, but I love it.
Wow. And you've added many more since then.
Many, many more, yes.
Yeah, I've seen that from the photographs. We're coming up on a break here. We have to take a break. We're going to talk some more with Anna Felicity Friedman about her book, The World Atlas of Tattoo. Quite an accomplishment, this book. And with us in the studio is Chris Keaton, founder of the Baltimore Tattoo Museum. If you have a tattoo story to share, please give us a ring on midday during this hour. I think it'd be wonderful to hear from you. 410-662-8780. Your first tattoo, or why you get tattooed, or your regret over a tattoo. Any tattoo story you'd like to share. If you have questions, or you want to push a little further and wonder why people get so many tattoos on their body, try your question on our guests. 410-662-8780. And welcome back. Dan Roderick's here in Studio A with Chris Keaton, founder of the Baltimore Tattoo Museum. More than just a museum, right? You can actually get tattooed there.
Yes. We set it up in a way so that the clients are also part of the exhibit.
Oh, right.
So you can watch them get tattooed.
I got to spend more time there. I stepped in there one day, and I need to go back. Anna Felicity Friedman is with us, too. She's a tattoo historian and curator. The occasion is her book, publication of her book, The World Atlas of Tattoo, and it's really an amazing accomplishment. Anna, before we go to the phone lines and take some questions and comments from our listeners, I just wonder if you would take us to the beginning, as far as you can tell, like, you know, is there, if you needed to point us to a place where tattooing might have began, where there was a cradle of tattooing, where might that, what part of the world might that be?
I don't know that anybody can do that, because tattooing is a relatively simple process. And one of the theories that I think is most compelling about how humans discovered tattoos is that it was by accident. Maybe they were cooking meat over a fire, and there was some charcoal on a pointed stick, and they tripped, and it lodged into their leg. They took it out, and later they realized it had made this permanent black mark that could then be replicated by a conscious process. There are so many traditions that have antiquity across the globe from cultures that wouldn't have had contact with one another. It really does seem to me that it arose independently in several different places.
Is there a point where you could say in the history where it became sort of customary to see tattooing?
It varies from culture to culture. In some cultures, it was not only customary but mandatory, and in other cultures, it didn't exist at all. So if there's anything people can take away from this book, it's the incredible diversity of tattooing and its presences and absences throughout time and in a variety of different cultures.
Yeah, that's why I say I think the photographs, and you might agree with this, Chris, show the diversity or the range of styles of tattooing around the world.
All sorts of different styles, all sorts of different art. I mean, it's just, you can see that there are people taking different perspectives on how they approach what they're designing and doing.
Can you say that there's an American style of tattooing?
Definitely.
How would you describe that?
Head bold, bright colors, heavy black, strong outlines.
And how does that compare, Anna, today with, say, Europe or Asia tattooing, from what you can see?
In Asia, tattooing tends to be dominated by the Japanese style that started in the 1750s, and that's sort of become popularized across Asia, although there are plenty of indigenous styles that still exist today. Europe, I think what might mark European tattooing is sort of a more playful experimentation, a lot of folk art influence and photorealism, things like this. There are two other very American inventions with respect to tattoo styles as well, though. The black and gray style comes out of Southern California in the 60s and 70s, and that's very much an American invention that then spreads globally. And the kind of very stark, pseudo-tribal tattooing, huge abstract black patterns, across broad swaths of the body. That also comes out of America, out of Southern California, San Francisco, L.A., also in the 60s and 70s. So those are two other styles that America has particularly contributed to the global contemporary tattoo world.
And I'm interested in tattooing and women, and it sounds like the 19th century was pretty interesting for that. Could you talk a little bit about women and getting tattoos?
Yeah, unfortunately, because women have largely been left out of historical literature, it's hard to reconstruct the history of women and tattooing. But certainly in the 19th century, we have women who were socialites getting Japanese tattoos and also getting elegant tattoos from artists who were promoting their studios as ateliers. There was even cosmetic tattooing then. Then we have circus performers who are getting extensive tattoos as a way to make money, and female tattooed circus performers made quite a bit of money for the day. And then we also have women getting romantic tokens, their lovers' names, things like this. There's a Civil War era text called The Morgansons where the woman gets her lover's name inscribed on her wrist. And this is one of the small bits of evidence we have that there was this sort of more humble practice on women as well.
Chris Keaton, before we go to the phone lines, women in these days, do you agree with that Pew Research finding that showed about 50-50 men, women, or is it more one than the other? In your experience?
My experience, we have more women coming through the shop right now than men.
Huh. And what are they looking for compared to men? Almost anything?
Anything.
It's the whole range?
From little tokens to large, extravagant pieces.
Yeah, yeah. Chris Keaton of the Baltimore Tattoo Museum and Anna Felicity Friedman, who put together this book, The World Atlas of Tattoo, published by Yale University Press. So let's go to the phone lines and hear from some of our listeners here. I'm going to start with Peg in Severna Park, because she has an interesting story to share, I think. Hello, Peg. Hi, welcome to Midday, Peg.
Thank you.
What did you want to tell us?
Pardon me?
What did you want to tell us, Peg?
Well, I wanted to tell you my tattoo story. I raised my family and had my career, and I retired in 1980. My husband had died in June. And in September, when I turned 80, I got my first tattoo.
You got a
tattoo?
It was a
surprise for my children.
Wow.
Believe me, it was a surprise.
I bet it was. So, Peg, what was the tattoo, and where did you get it?
I got it on my left shoulder. And it was my husband's initials with a rose.
Oh, this is very nice. And you did this as an homage to your husband. And how did your children, or do you have grandchildren?
I do. I have 26 grandchildren.
26?
Wow.
Congratulations, Peg. But I just wonder, how did some of them react to this?
They all said, Mom, my grandmom, what are you doing? So then last year I went on a safari with one of my granddaughters, and we decided we would get an elephant tattoo when we came home because we both fell in love with the elephants. So I got an elephant tattoo on my right shoulder this past June.
Peg, and you're still 80, or have you?
I'm 82 now.
82 now. So Peg's added another tattoo. And what about the granddaughter?
She got it was her second tattoo.
And you have matching elephants?
We do.
Oh, yeah. Well, thank you, Peg. Thanks for that story.
Okay,
yeah.
Thank you.
I went on safari. Listen.
Go
ahead, Anna. Yeah,
I love this story, right?
Yeah.
It's such a great story, and it very much in keeping with the history of tattooing. The initial tattoo to memorialize someone who died, the tattoo as a shared memento of this incredible travel experience. It's perfect. And the fact that this new resurgence of tattooing in the 21st century has enabled this wonderful, adventurous 82-year-old woman to get these tattoos without fear of stigma is phenomenal and fantastic.
We've had quite a few people come in their late 80s, early 90s, come in and get their first tattoo because they had grandchildren that got tattooed and they had always wanted one, but it was looked down upon for so long.
In their generation, yeah.
Yeah, so they finally got one.
Right. That was during those wilderness years that Anna was talking about.
The dark age.
Yeah, dark age. Yeah. Oh, that's a great story, Peg. Thank you. If anyone else would like to speak with us and share a story, 410-662-8780. This is Tisha in Mount Vernon right here in Baltimore. Tisha, go right ahead.
Yes, hi. A quick comment. I wanted to know if either of your contributors could talk about Vinny's and how Vinny himself started out as, you know, with doing tattoos, but then one day he had a woman to come in, and she had a mastectomy. No, I think it was his sister had a mastectomy, and she wanted a nipple. So now he travels around the world and does reconstructive tattooing and provides nipples for women who no longer have them.
Yeah, thank you, Tisha. I think I read a story about
it. Yes.
Is it Vinny?
Vinny Myers, yes.
Vinny Myers. Tell us a little bit more about that person.
He's been an icon in this area, started a very good shop up long ago and has been one of the pinnacle arts early on in this area, and has found this new niche that needs to be filled and is excelling at it and making people feel more whole again.
Where is he based?
He has two shops, one in Westminster and one...
Oh, he's in Maryland?
Yes,
okay.
Both in Maryland.
Wow. Anne, are you familiar with him?
Yes, familiar with his work, and there's also a number of other artists who have begun to specialize in this type of work, both with doing essentially trompe-l'oeil nipples and also just doing elaborate, interesting tattoos to cover up the area or accentuate the area, highlight the area. One of the artists featured in my book, Shannon Purvis Barron, is someone who's been active with one of the organizations that pairs breast cancer survivors with tattooers around the U.S. to sponsor their tattoos for healing and for celebrating life. So it's an incredible service that tattooers are doing. Mm.
Anna Felicity Friedman and the World Atlas of Tattoos. So, Anna, do you have to run off?
I can stay for a little bit longer if you want. It's an interesting conversation. So.
Yeah, I would like you to stay because you're great. And we got Chris Keaton here with us, and folks are calling in to share their tattoo stories. So if we hear another one like Peg's, I'll be happy. But anyway, any story, share it with us, 410-662-8780. So Anna will stay. Also want to thank Joe Squared Pizza for providing lunch for our guests today once again. And to our listeners who are showing their support for Your Public Radio, WYPR, by calling in or going online to make a donation here during our fall membership campaign. And welcome back to Midday. Anna Felicity Friedman, her book, The World Atlas of Tattoo. And we go to Australia and the Oceanic Islands, Anna, for an email that I'd like to read and get your comment on. Indonesia and Malaysian Borneo. Linda writes to us from Stewartstown, Pennsylvania. She says, when vacationing in Borneo, we stayed in a Sarawak village where the interpreter told us the implement used for tattoos is a board with the pattern in nails. The men have a few on their arms and legs, but the most important is magical stuff on their necks to prevent headhunters from taking their heads. Does that sound accurate based on what you discovered in that part of the world?
Yeah, there are some stencils for in Borneo for imprinting the patterns on the skin, but then they're tattooed with hand tools. And today, sometimes they're tattooed by machine as well. And yeah, those neck tattoos, the headhunter's tattoos, are pretty phenomenal. There is one depicted in the book in the entry for one of the Indonesian artists that we profiled. Yes, the myth goes that those tattoos are protective of against having their heads cut off. Whether it really served that apotropaic function or not, I would have to ask some headhunters.
Right, you have to get an opinion survey.
We can task the Pew Foundation with that.
I actually have one of those neck designs on the back of my calf that another artist had made more popular, Zilueta, I believe his last name.
And does he use a stencil or is it a tattoo?
It's a tattoo.
Yeah, but it's made to look like that.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. One more question. I need to ask Anna this before we go to the phone lines. So in doing this book, compiling the artwork and the history, was there one that really jumped out at you that you hadn't seen before that you said, oh my, where is this? Where is this from? What, I mean, it really jumped off the page at you.
Oh, there are so many artists like that, some of whom I discovered on my own when looking for artists in particular areas of the world that I wanted to represent, and some of whom some of my contributing writers told me about. One that I'm particularly interested in is an artist from India, Abhinandan Basu, who goes by the name Obi. Another artist in the book, actually, Mo Naga, told me about his work, and when I looked into it, I was very excited. So he basically has taken this Western form of dot work, which was influenced by Indian art to begin with, and made it his own and added this unique Indian folk art spin on it. And it's just this incredible blending of a global contemporary style by someone who actually lives in that area, who's then customized it even further, and I just, his work excites me so much.
Some of these photographs, the tattoo, I mean, it's just amazing. It looks like people are wearing body suits that were hand-painted. It's hard to believe that these are actually tattoos, but indeed they are. I'm looking at Tang Ping, masked demon with peonies and waves, Hindu deity, a demon attacking someone. It's amazing, huh?
Some of the art coming out of China right now is just mind-blowingly incredible.
Let's go back to the phone lines and take some calls as we discuss tattoos and tattooing. It's Hewan in Baltimore. Hi, Hewan.
Hi. So I just had a comment about tattoos and stigmas. I'm a physician at Hopkins. I'm a starting physician, and so I'm pretty young in the ranks of hospital staff. But I have 4 tattoos. Most of them, I guess all of them are visible, but only if you really search for them. And the one recently that I got, most recent one, was a pretty large one on the underside of my upper right arm. That is the bench that's around Baltimore that has the greatest city in America. Because I'm a Baltimore transplant. I came to Baltimore 10 years ago from Boston. I'm from Denver, but I do think Baltimore is the greatest city. And I think tattoos do represent art, and I think a lot of people don't see it as that still in some ways. And I know a lot of my friends who are physicians who want tattoos, for example, that symbolize a trip such as pegs or something meaningful to them, won't get it because they're afraid that it's still stigmatized in the hospital. There's a few of us, including myself, who just kind of walk around and still do our job. And I think now that it seems like the Pew Research Foundation has shown that there's a lot more people getting tattoos, and I think it's becoming much more acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think it's great art. I think of it as just putting on earrings, for example, but it's kind of a part of you. It's body art, and I think tattoos are beautiful. So
yeah, I see. He won. Yeah, and your tattoo sounds interesting, but I wonder in professional life, in your work as a doctor, did anyone say to you, a supervisor or anyone, I don't know if you have a supervisor, but anyone say to you, you know, you probably want to wear long sleeves so we don't see that? Did anyone ever say that?
So no one's actually said that to me flat out. So I did get I had always thought about getting a tattoo when I was in college and then after college. I didn't get a tattoo until I was almost done graduating from medical school. That was my first one. and then once I became a resident physician, I gathered more. And that's when some people think about that or think of saying those things to me, but I don't think, I haven't had any experience with that. Most people are just like, wow, that's cool. Really? Is that a bench from Baltimore? And I'm like, yes.
I appreciate the call and the comment on that. That's interesting. Chris, you want to comment on that? You have customers who say, yeah, I'd love to get a tattoo, but, you know, it needs to be over here because I wear long sleeve shirts or something.
Yeah, you never know what your future is going to bring. So a lot of people don't want to close doors before they open them. So you put them in places where they can be hidden, mm-hmm. So they aren't seen.
And in conversations, they say this. That's the reason why they ask for that placement. Anna, any comment on that?
Back to the history of tattoo fashions ebbing and flowing, you know, certainly it's potentially a wise decision. I have my tattoos stop at my wrists and my collar, specifically because of that, the possibility that things might change in the future. Although I certainly respect people who are willing to take that leap and get hand tattoos or neck tattoos, face tattoos. I would recommend to your caller to pick up a couple copies of the book and strategically place them around the office, maybe with some bookmarks to the pages with the German diplomat who has two armfuls of tattoos in the 1600s and some of the other very prestigious folks who had lots of visible tattoos to maybe change her coworkers' minds about the ones they want to get but fear getting.
Thank you, Anna. I mean, this is an art book, Chris. I mean, this is a coffee table art book.
Definitely.
It really is. I mean, Michelle in Howard County with your story and comment. Hi.
Hi. How are you today?
Good. What do you want to tell us, Michelle?
I'm a woman in my late 40s, and 5 years ago I got my very first tattoo, and it's my only at this point. But if you had told me 10 years ago that I'd be getting a tattoo, I would have told you were crazy.
So how did this happen?
You know, my life is radically different now than it was even 6 years ago. I moved from Portland, Oregon to Maryland. I started a new relationship, new job, all those things. And it was a symbol of all those differences. My kids, who are grown, thought that I was crazy, and they swore they would never get tattoos. Now, next Sunday, they are getting matching tattoos to celebrate my daughter's 21st birthday.
How long did you think about it, and then what did you ultimately decide to get as a tattoo?
I didn't think about it very long. You know, it was one of those ideas that just kind of came to me, and I talked to a friend who I knew had a couple of tattoos, got a reference for the tattoo artist, sent some emails back and forth. So it was probably less than 3 months that I thought about it.
What do you have, Michelle?
I have a, it sounds very typical, but it's not. I have a butterfly with a very special symbol as the body of the butterfly, but it's all kind of window pane style. And it's about probably 5 or 6 inches tall. And it is in a place that I can see it, but nobody else can. I work in a professional environment, and I think they're beautiful, but I realize not everybody else does, and I didn't ever. I don't necessarily want to answer a lot of questions about my tattoo. It was for me. It wasn't
right.
for anybody else.
Right. I get you. Thank you, Michelle. What's the most popular tattoo? Is there one that people – is a butterfly very commonly asked for?
It is common. The common things change. Over the years, I've seen the styles change, fads, trends.
What was common 10 years ago?
10 years ago, 15 years ago, it's kanji, Japanese writing. And so you can date people by the tattoos they
have. I've seen that. Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm.
Today, owls are the new panther.
Owls are the new panther?
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you for being here today, Chris. It was nice to have you on the show.
Thank you.
Chris Keaton is a founder and director of the Baltimore Tattoo Museum on Eastern Avenue. Eastern and what
Bond.
Street? Bond. Eastern and Bond. And you got to come and visit. You know, I thought Anna would be in town for the Baltimore Book Festival. I hope you get to visit our city sometime, Anna.
I have been to Baltimore many times, actually.
Oh. So. Well, next time, stop in and say hello. We'll do this again. I guys really enjoyed the conversation.
And all right, I'll do that for sure.
Anna Felicity Friedman, who's based in Chicago, her book from Yale University Press is The World Atlas of Tattoo. Thank you for being on the show, Anna.
Thanks so much.
Okay.
And if anybody would like more information, they can go to tattoohistorian.com.
Tattoohistorian.com. It's quite a rich website. Thank you very much. And thank you again, Chris. And thank you, everybody, for tuning in to our Midday Friday. I hope you enjoyed the program. Come back on Monday. We got another show for you from 12 to 2 on Monday. And that's made possible by members like you, people who donate to this radio station, WYPR, and keep everything rolling here. And we're in the midst of our fall membership campaign. Andy Beanstalk and Sheila Cast, Maryland Morning Host, standing by to tell you how you can become a member or remain one.